quick trivia. How many years were the Jewish people in Mitzrayim? 210. Okay, so you ask that question. Most yeshiva-educated people will tell you 210. Sometimes you'll get a different number. Sometimes you'll get the number 400. And we all know the Dvar Torah. The Kodesh Baruch Hu Chishev Es HaKeitz. Keitz is Gematria 190, right? So he took off 190 years from the 400, and we had 210. All of that. Even though Rashi does provide us with that number, it actually doesn't say anywhere in Chumash that it was 210 years. So that's most likely the reality of how long we were there, but the Chumash in two separate occasions actually reports a specific number of how long we were there, and neither time is the number 210 years. One place is in this week's parasha, U'moshav b'nei Yisrael asher yeshuv b'mitzrayim shloshim shana v'arba meos shana, 430. That specifically after 430 years we find in the death of Mitzrayim. And then, probably more famously, in Parshas Lech Lecha, Hashem tells Avraham Avinu, Yodeo Teheda, Ki Ger Yezrach Beres Olem V'Avadom Yinu Asam, how long? Arba Meyo Shana. Right, that's the well-known passage, 400 years. So how do you reconcile these three different numbers? You have the 210, the 430, the 400. So which is it? What do these numbers represent? That's question number one. Rashi quotes a medrash that gives us two different reasons for Makas Choshech. Makas Choshech is in this week's parasha, and Rashi tells us two reasons why it was necessary to have a period of darkness in Mitzrayim. One, he says, because of the Rishei B'nei Yisrael could be killed off without a Chilul Hashem, without the Egyptians noticing that there are Jews suffering as well. Every other Makkah, if Jews would have suffered during that Makkah or would have died or perished during that Makkah, all the Egyptians would have realized it and they would have said, you see, the Jews are suffering just like the Egyptians are suffering. It was only when the Egyptians are enveloped in darkness can HaKadosh Baruch Hu comfortably take care of the Rishei Yisrael, the Poshei Yisrael, and wipe them out without creating Chilul Hashem. So that's one explanation Rashi has. And the second is so that the Jewish people can investigate where the valuables that the Egyptians have are hidden, so that they'll be able to later come back and borrow them and take them out of Mitzrayim with them. Right? Those are the two explanations Rashi has for Makas Choshech. I don't want to ask any questions on those specific explanations, but I want to ask a question on why it is that we need an explanation for Makas Choshech. Meaning, was there such a Rashi by every other Makkah? That why is it that we had this kind of... Choshech is annoying. Choshech is terrifying. Choshech is scary. They weren't able to move. Isn't that enough? Meaning that HaKadosh Baruch was punishing the Egyptians the same way he did with Tamitz, Farday, and Kinim, and Arv, and Davrish, the same way he did with all the Makos. HaKadosh Baruch was punishing the Mitzrim with Choshech. Why do we need like that? Why were Chazal not satisfied with that as an explanation for Makos Choshech? That they needed to come up with other suggestions as to why Dafka Choshech. So last week, if you recall, we spoke about the purpose of all of the Makos up until Barad. Right? We spoke about how Paro sort of set the tone for what Yetzias Mitzrayim was going to be about. And Paro said, I don't know who this God is. You know, I never heard of him before. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu spent the first several Makos introducing himself. Oh, you don't know who I am? Allow me to introduce myself. Right? That's what we discussed last week. That it was introducing Paro to the concept of Ribono Shlom. But maybe in this week's parsha, the focus shifts a little bit to the Jewish people, to Klal Yisrael. The very simple question we face when we think about Geulas Mitzrayim, and that any thinking person has to think about whenever you suffer, whenever you experience some great Yeshua. You know, I can't tell you how many times the question has been asked. You know, we got this great refuah. Why did we have the machla? Why did we need to suffer? Meaning, oh great, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a Geulas Mitzrayim, Yeshua, fantastic. But why the Shibud Mitzrayim? I mean, why was it so necessary that we would have been in a situation where we need a Geulas Mitzrayim? We spent a lot of time celebrating the Geula, but the Shibud is really harsh, and why was it necessary? So the Gemara, in the Darim Daf Lamed Beis, asks a question that seems to imply what the goal of the galus was, why it is that we had to suffer. Leaving aside the answers, the Gemara is going to give three answers to this question, but listen to the question. Gemara Nedarim Lam Beis. Mipreima ne'enash Avraham Avinu v'nishtabdu banav l'mitzrayim masayim v'asr shana. What avera did Avram do that his children had to be in Shibud Mitzrayim for 210 years? What did he do that he needed this punishment? The assumption is, what was the purpose of galus? Onesh. It was punishment. It was punishment for what we had done wrong. We had to be punished. But punishment is not something we enjoy. It's not something we're supposed to enjoy. Ultimately, it's for our benefit, because ultimately it cleans our slate. It gives us a kapara. It gives us the ability to move forward. But punishment, that's clearly the assumption of the Gemara and the Nedarim. Again, the Gemara has three different answers as to why, what sin it was that needed to be punished, but it's punishment for a particular avera. But then there's another element to galus that seems to have nothing to do with punishment at all. Chazal already darshan, the raya that has nothing to do with punishment, Chazal already darshan, the second pasuk in the entire Chumash, va'aretz ha'isasohu, va'vohu, v'choshech al p'nei tahom. Chazal darshan, each word in that pasuk to be a reference to a different galus, as an indication that already from the time of Briyas Ha'olam, before man ever had a chance to do any sort of sin, there was already a plan for galus. There was already a plan for shibud. All of that was supposed to happen before we did anything wrong. So you can't say that galus is only about onesh. If it were only about onesh, that wouldn't have been built into the bria. It wouldn't have been built into the fabric of creation that we have to go to galus. But if it's not punishment, then what is it? So the pasuk in Parshas Devarim refers to galus Mitzrayim as a kor habarzel. Rashi translates it to mean that a place where gold is refined. What does it mean, a place where gold is refined? Gold is beautiful. Gold is extremely valuable, extremely expensive. You know, they say that it's always a good investment, right? It will always eventually go up. I don't know if that's true. Historically, does it always go up? I don't know. But they say gold is something that's always been considered something extremely valuable and continues to be valuable. But the value only comes to the surface once it goes through a certain refining process. Not because it deserves to have to suffer through that refining process of the fire, the kiln, or whatever it takes to purify gold, but because that's how gold becomes valuable. That's how you extract its value. That's how you allow it and enable it to shine. So our galus, yeah, on the one hand, it's a punishment. That the Gemara Nedarim clearly assumes. But on the other hand, it's also a way to be our kor habarzel. It's a way to bring out the best in us, to bring out our potential. And that's why Geula is described as goy mikerev goy. Just like childbirth, the process is very painful. Why? Because the woman is being punished, so there's an element of that also, right? That it's an eternal punishment for the Eitz Hadas. But you know, each individual woman is not being punished through the pain of childbirth, but that's how human life is created. That's how the greatest gift we have, which is the greatest accomplishment a human being can ever do, is to bring more human life into the world. No matter how much money you make, no matter what else you do, there's nothing that can be a greater accomplishment than to bringing an actual human life into the world. That kind of tremendous accomplishment can only come when there's a little bit, when there's some element of suffering. Not because it's an onesh, but because sometimes suffering brings out greatness. When we view HaKadosh Baruch Hu as an Av HaRachman, it helps to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu's purpose in doing things. You know, if you view HaKadosh Baruch Hu as an Av HaRachman, a parent, he's a father, a mother. What does a parent do sometimes? Sometimes a parent asks a child to do things that the child is not happy about doing. It's inconvenient, they're busy, and the parent says, you know, I want you to please take out the garbage. Teenage kid, he's busy on his Xbox. He's right in the middle of the game. Don't you understand? There are 2.5 minutes left in this game. It's a close game. This is a very important moment in my life. Like, I might accomplish this tremendous feat of thumb mobility by winning this game, and you're asking me to stop all of that, to put my life on hold for what? To take out the garbage. And he can't understand. Like, why can't the garbage wait? Why does the game have to wait? Why can't the garbage wait? You can't understand. And you have to realize when, you know, when you look in retrospect, maybe a few years later, and you're already in college, and you're thinking, oh, that's kind of stupid, right? So you realize in retrospect that by doing that, you're going to be a better husband. You're going to be the kind of person that looks around and sees what needs to get done and wants to do things. You'll be a better person ultimately. So yeah, sometimes things that are annoying for us, or that are things that we don't like at all at the time that we're experiencing them, but they actually make us better. So you have this duality of galus, of what galus is, and of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does to us when we suffer. Number one, it's punishment. There's no denying schar va'onesh. Schar va'onesh is something we believe very firmly in. We believe very strongly in the notion of schar va'onesh. There's no denying that. But there's also a certain element of going through adversity brings out greatness. It does. It crushes some people and does not bring out greatness. But a person who's up to it, it can bring out greatness when a person has to suffer through adversity. That's the way it works. I just ordered on Amazon. I just got what's called Veil of Tears, Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung, Zichrono Livracha. You know where Pinchas Hirschsprung was? No Montrealians here. So Pinchas Hirschsprung was the chief rabbi of Montreal for many decades, and he was one of those geniuses, you know, that could do like the pin test. If you stick the pin in the Gemara, he could tell you. He was a Talmud of Meir Shapiro and Chachmei Lublin. He died, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago, Rav Hirschsprung. He is the sole Haskama on the Sefer Eretz HaTzvi, on Rav Shechter's Sefer. He's the only one Rav Shechter went to for Haskama on the Sefer. Rav Shechter was close to Rav Hirschsprung. Rav Hirschsprung was close with a lot of different kinds of people. He was close with Satmar and Lubavitch, and he taught in the Lubavitch Yeshiva for a long time. Very, very interesting person. He wrote a memoir. He's the only Gadol, I believe, that actually wrote a memoir of his experiences during the Holocaust. He was like 32 years old, and he wrote a memoir of his experiences during the Holocaust. He wrote it in Yiddish, it was translated into English. So just reading it, and you see like how greatness emerges from the most terrifying of circumstances, from the most horrifying of circumstances, and greatness emerges. So there is that element of the Kodesh Baruch Hu also, you know, sometimes in smaller measure, and sometimes in large measure, like we had in unfathomably large measures like we had in the Holocaust. But once you appreciate that dual meaning of galus, you can better understand how to reconcile the two ways to count the years of galus. Rashi explains, what does Rashi explain? 400 years starts from when? The birth of Yitzchak, right? 430 years starts from when? Bris Bein HaBesarim, when Avram was actually told about the future galus. And the actual time served in Mitzrayim, 210. Right? All three numbers make sense. Now, why would we... Now, the 210 part makes sense to me, right? Because that's the time that we're actually there. But why would we start counting from these odd points in history? From Yitzchak and from Avraham? Maybe starting the clock at those two points is an indicator of what the purpose of Galus was. You want to know what the purpose of Galus is? Look at the birth of Yitzchak. You want to know what the purpose of galus is? Look at the Bris Bein HaBesarim. I saw this in Rabbi Asher Brander's Sefer also, like I quoted last week from Rabbi Asher Brander, this week also. He said that Bris Bein HaBesarim, Avraham Avinu was told about punishment. That's why the Gemara says, Mipnei ma ne'enash Avraham Avinu. Right? V'gam es hagoya asher yavodu dan anochi. Hashem says, not only am I going to punish you, gam, I'm also going to punish them after they make you suffer. But the gam is because we're also being punished. That's part of what galus is. What happens to us is also an onesh. So when the Gemara asks what Avraham Avinu did, mipnei ma ne'enash Avraham Avinu, that brings about this galus. We start the clock at Bris Bein HaBesarim because the onesh element is best expressed through Bris Bein HaBesarim. The 400 year count begins with the birth of Yitzchak, because Yitzchak is a reflection of galus as a preparation for greatness. Galus as a preparation for becoming more, becoming better. rather than as an onesh. Yitzchak is an ola tamima. He deserves no punishment. He's also the very beginning of the fulfillment of the promise that Avraham Avinu is going to have descendants who are going to become a goy gadol, they're going to become a great nation. He suffers throughout his life. Challenges of Yishmael trying to kill him, almost being shechted on the Mizbeach, blindness. None of that was a punishment. They were all experiences that prepared him for greatness. And maybe we could argue that explains the two reasons Chazal offer for Makos Choshech. See, Klal Yakar points out that the other Makos did not require a reason because it was all about humbling Mitzrayim to the point that they begged for it to end. Right? That's the point. Every Makos brought them to their knees where they were just begging and running after the Jewish people saying, please, pray to your God, make this stop already. Makos Choshech could not be about bringing them to their knees. It could not be about them running after us, trying to find us and say, make it stop. Why not? Why can't it be about that? They couldn't do it. They couldn't move. Lo kamish mitachtav. They were frozen. There was no begging at the end, Klal Yakar points out. So what else could be the purpose of Makos Choshech? So Klal Yakar points out, it must be that the purpose of the Makos was not for what it's going to do for the Egyptians, but for what it's going to do for Klal Yisrael. And the Chazal say, okay, so what's if Makos Choshech is going to be the symbol toward the end of Gullus, of what Gullus was all about? It's our last impression of Gullus as we're about to leave. So Makos Choshech reflects both points. It's an opportunity to punish those who are not deserving. The Rishei Yisrael need to be punished. And that's the last element of Onesh in Gullus that we suffer, is the Rishei Yisrael being punished. And it's also a way to begin our path toward success, to begin our path toward a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Out of that darkness came our startup money that we were able to ultimately use to build the Mishkan. It was the wealth that we used to be able to have a sense of Ashras Hashchina. It's out of that darkness that came our greatness. And that's the Hashkafa that we have, for not just for Galus, but for all Yisurim. All Yisurim serve a dual function, both of which are very valuable. Gemara Navot Zar Dav Dalet says that Hashem sometimes makes us suffer because we don't always appreciate. But the Gemara says, not because. The Gemara says Hashem makes us suffer and we don't even realize what a gift that is sometimes. It's not designed to break us. It's designed to provide us with kapara, much needed kapara, and to make us better in the long run. To make us people who are more worthy people. Whenever a person goes through a period of time where there's challenge, where there's, and again, it doesn't have to always be these enormous challenges of Gullus Mitzrayim and the Holocaust and illness and terrible Yisurin. Anytime a person goes through something that's a rough patch, a person goes through times of uncertainty, person goes through a time where, like, you ever have like a week, you know, I don't know, probably finals week is not a week like that, but you ever have a week where, like, you look at what you're supposed to be doing this week and you say, there is no logical way I can get done what I'm supposed to get done this week. Like, it just doesn't make sense how this is going to work. How am I, there's a certain lachatz, a certain pressure that happens. And what does that do for a person? Sometimes, you know, we know what we're like without pressure. We know what we do over vacation. We have big plans. And what do? I mean, shouldn't be a nevuah that's miskayim, but what do? Nothing. We accomplish nothing. We do nothing. You know, whatever our plans are, you know, however modest they are, very often, you know, it's just like, oh, where'd it go? What did I do? You know, we accomplish anything. Because we know that accomplishment comes when there's a certain lachatz, when there's a certain pressure to accomplish. And we wouldn't be the same. You know, if someone were to ask you, what would your daily schedule be like if you won the lottery, if you didn't have any financial pressure for the rest of your life? Right? Mega Millions. You didn't have any financial pressure for the rest of your life. So what would your daily schedule be like? And would that be good for you? I was telling my wife yesterday, I was talking to a guy and a girl who are dating each other, and they're trying to figure out if their life goals are the same. So I said to them, think about what your life would look like if you didn't have any money pressure. You didn't have any, you know, Like, is the guy, if the guy says, well, I would learn 14 hours a day, and the girl says, I do not want a husband who would be learning 14 hours a day, even with no money pressure. I'd rather, we enjoy a lot of vacations or whatever, that he starts a foundation or, I don't know, other things, it could be other worthy things. And he works on charity work all day, half the day, and other things half the day. So maybe you're not exactly on the same page. So my wife said to me, it's a stupid advice. She said, because if someone would ask you, what would you do? You would say, I'd learn 14 hours a day. And she'd say, if someone would ask me, I would say, I don't want my husband learning 14 hours a day doing something. So I said, no, it's not true though. Because I don't think I would say I would learn 14 hours a day, because I know it's not realistic. I would want to do probably almost exactly what I'm doing. Maybe cut back a little bit so I could write a little more, but probably do exactly what I'm doing. Because it's part of being able to accomplish is that pressure. Like, a person is a productive person. It's yadua. If you want to get something done, who do you go to? The person who has nothing better to do, or the person who's busy? Always the person who's busy. Always. Because the person who's busy knows how to get things done. The person who's not doing anything doesn't know how to do anything. Doesn't know how to get something done. There's a certain greatness that comes out with pressure. It shouldn't be al yidei yisurin. Shalol al yidei yisurin ma'am. We shouldn't have any yisurin. But with that pressure that we have in life. So enjoy our vacation. It's good. But appreciate how much is able to be accomplished because we have certain pressures. We can't imagine a dual curriculum. How can we manage it? How can we accomplish it? When I'm working full time, how can I still grow as a ben Torah? How can I still? You can, and maybe you dafka can. Maybe if not for all those pressures, you wouldn't be able to. But a person has to realize that that's there to make us better. It's there to make us become great, and that's one of the messages of Galus and Geulas Mitzrayim.